Ladies and gentlemen, attention, attention. You know, usually I like to start the show with an upbeat tone and upbeat note, but I've been trying to get a hold of Jim and to no avail. I think it's official, man. I think I am now in search of a new co-host. So if you know anybody, you know, feel free to put some feelers out on Twitter, hashtag Flagrant Take Podcast, host search, and, you know, we'll see what we can do. In the meantime,
Hey.
Oh, hello? Who's this?
I told you I have a no trade clause. What did I tell you on Twitter?
Who is this guy?
This is NY Jones, man.
NY Jones 7, my guy is back.
Chris Axman won't get rid of me. I told him when he negotiated with me, he gave me a no trade clause. It's a big thing in New York.
He sat down with you, he pushed his glasses up on his face and said, "Do you want to be a part of Almighty Baller Podcast Network?"
Dude, and you said, laugh. Like last week, I was on Uncle Duty, like, because you were talking smack about me. I heard it.
It was love, man.
And he's like, "Hey, you want to be in? You want to be with us?" And I was like, "Yeah." And the rumors were that there was a lot of emotion, a lot of tears fighting back, but I ended up staying.
No doubt. He had Charlie Rosen sit next to him and everything, man.
Charlie Rosen wrote the piece, man. Oh, man, he's done. He's out of the organization.
My guy, it's good to have you back, man.
I'm kidding, man. Thanks a lot, man.
No
Thanks
doubt.
Thanks for calling everybody, too.
No doubt, man. Well, hell, man, you started off. You talked to the people. They heard enough of me.
What's up, guys? Well, I mean, it's long overdue. I mean, Fred is actually ditching me for guest appearances now.
Wow.
It's actually really good. So I've been actually listening to his pods because my commute's already an hour and a half into the city. So I actually listened to a pair of his stuff. He does some good content, always quote content on ESPN or whatever on Twitter, tagging us for opinions. You know, the Almighty Network has been expanding before our eyes. It's become a really big team, and I don't mean to say just five people. It's like, what is it, 16 episodes now?
Yeah, this is like episode 16 now, officially. Yeah, dog.
And then how many team members do we have? We have 16 team members too, right?
On the network, man, it's like 28 teams, man. We're bigger than the D-League right now, bro.
Yeah, so we can't do a shout-out segment anymore. We used to have five more. There's no way we're doing it.
It's
like
a wrap for the shout-outs, man. Just listen to Almighty Baller Podcast Network or run up on Chris Axman in the street and ask for his Rolodex because there's too many shows to name now, man.
They all have no trade clause except for you, Fred.
Yeah, I am apparently on the trade block. It is, you know, hey, whatever happens, happens. It's out of my control. All I can do is show up to work and take a game, one game at a time.
Thanks for keeping me, Fred. I appreciate it.
I didn't have a choice, but it's all good, man. It is all good, man. Why don't you tell the people what we're getting into today, man?
Well, today we're going to talk about, I mentioned this to you earlier last week. I thought it would be a good time since the midway point. We're 41 games in or even more. The Uprisers and Sunsetters, three each. Doesn't matter, East or West. Mine's we're predominantly more Uprisers from the West, but that's what we're going to go into. Let's talk about the Uprisers. What do you think are your three teams in the West that you predicted to be bad, but they ended up being good or above your expectations?
All right, no problem, man. Let me go ahead and kind of set the stage a little bit. When it comes to the Uprisers, these are more or less teams who may be in the playoff hunt for the first time in quite some time. They've undergone a transition within the franchise, and these are teams that we view as having a bright future altogether. You know, it's not just a matter of having a young core. It's, you know, you can actually see them, you know, overtaking teams who, as we said, are sunsetters, teams that are pretty much going to be falling out of contention and needing to undergo a rebuild. So for myself, man, Uprisers, I got the Golden State Warriors. I think their future looks right. No, I'm just
really?
Kidding. No, Doug, I'm not doing that.
I'm like, dude, man, you can't take this a little different over here. You can't just.
No, I got to give a little bit of suspense,
I'm
man.
I'm going to give you a live tribute like Joe Johnson had with the Nets, man.
No, that's man.
You're going to be in memory soon.
Yeah, no, listen.
State Warriors.
Listen, no, my Uprisers, man. My first team that I'm going to go with, man, it's actually going to be hailing out of the East. And this is a team that I predicted to actually have the third seed, and they got off to a rocky start. But, man, I'm going with Washington. I'm going with the Washington Wizards, man. I mean, we know that backcourt is locked in long term with John Wall and Bradley Beal. And, like I said, man, it was looking very bleak at the beginning of the year. Like, they got off to a horrible start under Scotty Brooks. It was looking like they weren't kind of taking the principles he was instilling into that offense. But after watching a lot of them over the past week or so and seeing them really turn the tide, you can tell this team is having fun again. John Wall is playing, you know, MVP caliber basketball for this team and being the leader that we all know he has the talent of becoming, and showing that he's an elite point guard in this league, man. And honestly, I feel like as long as they can add a young big man to that piece, within the next year or two. Gortat? Say that again?
Is Gortat on that team still?
Gortat, yeah, but he's not a young piece. I mean, we remember his Phoenix days, and no, I don't think he's going to be the long-term answer there, but I'm glad that they were able to kind of shed the weight of Nene as he went over to Houston. But I still feel like there's still some pieces they need to add. But they're definitely showing that they can play well under Scotty Brooks, and I think that they're going to be a team that can at least hold down that 3-5 range over the next, I would say, 4 to 5 years in the Eastern Conference.
I think Wall's having, to just piggyback off what you were saying, Wall's having a phenomenal year, 23 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds. I think Bradley Beal, a lights-out shooter, and then Otto Porter, who's having a career season as well. And it took them a rough start. I mean, they rebounded with the Knicks, and they've been beyond that. They've been playing very well together as of late, and I think they can make a good push in the East because the East has been dismal, as they're all in the same pack and whatnot. So hopefully this is their year. There are a lot more feisty contenders like the Hornets. Kemba Walker improved as well. So those are the teams that they're going to be fighting with. But this is a good. They're still young. I mean, John Wall's still young. That core is still young. So, a lot of optimism for the Warriors.
I still give Boston a slight edge ahead of them. But if I had to pick between, you know, all the point guards out East, I think Kyrie's still in the class above, you know, John Wall, and Kyle Lowry may get a slight nudge. But I'm putting John Wall right behind Kyle Lowry, and of course Kyrie Irving, and I would even put him ahead of Isaiah Thomas.
Oh no, Isaiah Thomas is having a crazy year.
He's having a crazy year, but no. If I'm starting a team, though, this is just from a strictly a GM perspective. Give me a 6'4 point guard who can score as well as play make, and I also like his ability to get into passing lanes on defense. So that's just my personal opinion, man. Who'd you have for your first upriser?
I thought the Jazz would be a fifth seed, but I didn't think they would be this good. The Utah Jazz in the West. They're actually fifth in the West. George Hill came out of nowhere. He's having a career year, even though he's had a bunch of injuries, which I don't understand, but hopefully he'll be healthy for the long run. Rudy Gobert, explosive year, come off the gates. Everyone predicted a breakout season, but he's actually addressing that and even going beyond that. Hayward is doing his usual routine, and they're number one in defense, which is a shock.
That's awesome.
And they're giving up 95 points a game, which is pretty high from, like, you know, the early 2000s era. But in this type of era with the high octane offenses and whatnot, I give them a lot of props. Quinn Snyder, Coach of the Year candidate for sure, top three. And I give them loads of credit. They're shocking me. They're shocking the whole league. And shout out to all, like, smaller market teams, man. They're really on the uprise.
I agree, man. Listen, when it comes to small market teams, I'm always skeptical until it gets to contract time, man. Because that's when you usually see if they're going to withstand or if they're going to completely blow it up. Because eventually, you know, you've already paid Gordon Hayward. You're going to have to pay Rudy Gobert. You're going to have to figure out, I believe, George Hill's in a contract year next year. Yep. And he's getting paid about $8 million. You've already credited him with being a large component of their turnaround. You still haven't seen the development of Dante Exum yet. He hasn't quite taken off like you had hoped.
I don't think you're going to see that for a while.
And then I think you also got to figure out Derek Favors. You know, where does he fit and what are you willing to pay him long term if you're wanting to keep everything intact? So I think there's a few components here or there that I'm a little skeptical about, but as of right now, there's no way you can deny the fact that these guys are definitely making a statement and they're for sure an upriser.
Before we move on, I want to ask you, Derek Favors, would you use him as a trade chip for the deadline and use Trey Lyles and put him into the starting lineup? This way you got like a good blend of youth and veteranship.
I wouldn't. I would rather keep things as is as of right now. Just because with Trey Lyles next to Rudy Gobert, I feel like now you're pulling in a guy in Trey Lyles who can't really score in the post. And Rudy Gobert isn't an offensive threat either. So now you have no existence of any kind of low post game that's going to be a threat. And then it kind of ruins the spacing for your shooters out there on the perimeter. Like, you know, your George Hills, your Gordon Haywards. Now everybody can pretty much stay home on those guys. Whereas you have to contend with the fact Derek Favors can really be a beast on the offensive glass and get some putbacks. And so I think there's some things that I think would really shake up that starting lineup, you know, component and chemistry if you were to make that move.
Gotcha, gotcha. You want to move on?
Absolutely, man. All right, man. Uprisers. And this might be a little bit of a controversial pick because, you know, with the news of Jabari Parker being benched and not quite understanding, you know, him going out and leaking the information about the team meeting and, you know, really what that was all about. I love Milwaukee's direction. When they made the trade for Tony Snell to get rid of MCW and they made the move to bring in, you know, Michael Beasley. And of course they had the injury to Chris Middleton. There was a lot that seemed to be a little shaky. You weren't sure, you know, these were gambles of moves that they had, but ultimately, man, I still like the young core of Giannis Antetokounmpo. I like Jabari Parker, this incident notwithstanding, you know, John Henson. I really like the makeup of this team, the long, the athleticism, their ability to have an amoeba defense where guys can defend multiple positions. And they seem to really be, you know, receiving Jason Kidd's philosophy and message really well. I think Jason Kidd has found that he's a coach that's best served to coach younger players as opposed to...
He really connect with the players, though. That's what I appreciate the most. Like, they're believing in what he's saying. It's kind of like... You know, whatever he said to the Knicks back in 2002, not to bring it back to them, but he can really harness and gather that team, but this time he's doing it as a coach, and I think that's what's most enticing about him as a coach. It's awesome.
Which I think is better than his stint in, you know, Brooklyn as that coach, because exactly, I felt like those guys kind of viewed him more as a peer than a coach, and so you saw that kind of power struggle. It's hard for... First of all, I think KG to listen to anybody, but KG to have to listen to a guy who had been a teammate of his, you know, in the Sydney Olympics and somebody he viewed as a peer. Same thing with Paul Pierce. I think it was difficult. And so I think he's found his niche. He has an ear, you know, he has the ear of these young players, and I really like the future for Milwaukee.
They're actually going to get better, too, because Middleton's going to come back by the All-Star break. I think limited minutes and whatnot. So they're only going to get stronger. And just want to give a shout-out to the rookie, Malcolm Brogdon. He's really been playing well in the point guard slot.
He's been a find, man.
Some duties from Giannis. But they're overall, that's a great pick. They're 20-23, but they are an upriser. I think their trajectory is upward, and they're in the playoff hunt. And they're only going to get stronger as you know, season progresses with Middleton coming back.
Absolutely, man. And who you got for your second upriser?
Well, the Thunder, I had them at 41-41. They were, I think, the eighth seed, if I remember correctly. But they're right now 25-19, sixth in the West. I mean, Westbrook, what more can you say? He's a triple-double machine. He's really galvanizing that team. He's got Steven Adams, Oladipo, Jeremy Grant, which has actually been a really good acquisition for them. I'd like to see more from Domantas Sabonis. He's a rookie. I think it was a high pick, draft pick, but he's mostly a three-point specialist on that team. If he can really unleash the rest of his game instead of just... this is more of a Billy Donovan issue, but if Donovan can like put him in like different situations, like in the post, and give him opportunities on offense, which is very hard to do when Westbrook is averaging like the whole like 30 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists.
Yeah, his usage rate is pretty high. That team can
really get much better. I'm sorry?
Yeah, Russell's usage rate is pretty high.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think it's like, but you know, 95% if you're looking at a pie chart. It's like all Russell, and then it's like a little sliver for everybody else.
That's what I'm saying. I think him, Oladipo, and Sabonis can really... Sabonis hasn't really come to fruition in terms of an offensive game, but I think if they really gave him like plays, he's a very talented player that he played very well in college, so I don't understand. You have a high draft pick, you got to use him.
Well, more,
if that's the case, they could have a big four on that team, just like they did with the big three back when they had KD, you know, Harden, and Westbrook. They could try to make another... squad of their own.
Don't do that. Don't remind Oklahoma City fans that they had Kevin Durant and James Harden on their team.
and listen, I'm a Sabonis homer, so nothing's transpired. I'm just saying, I was a big fan of him in college.
Well, even if he doesn't even turn into the scorer that you hope, if he could just have half of the passing ability of his dad out of the post, Arvydas Sabonis' passing back in the day was phenomenal. He and Vlade Divac used to contend for being the best passing big men out of the post, and even that could be something that could spare Russ some usage and also make his job a little bit easier. But in regards to a third uprising team, I was kind of searching and trying to figure out, you know, I kept looking at New Orleans and I wasn't quite sure the stock of that team. So I wanted to kind of switch it up, and I know I'm kind of changing it, you know, in the middle of the game, I'm calling an audible on you, but I want to call a pretender team, a young team who may be showing well, but in all actuality, I don't believe their future is that bright. And so that's what I'm actually going to go with in regards to my next pick for my team for uprisers. It's more of a fake upriser. And I'm actually going to go with Detroit on this. I'm going to go with the Detroit Pistons, but I'm going to tell you why, right? Because I had them picked, you know, in the preseason forecast to be a playoff team. I had them as a team that I thought could be a fifth seed. You know, I love SVG, man. Stan Van Gundy's phenomenal. I think he's not only great on the sidelines, I think he was also a really good pick to have, you know, the president of basketball operations attached to his title. I like Stanley Johnson, though I'm not quite sure what he is yet. And then I also like the fact that they were able to, you know, acquire, you know, Tobias Harris last year. I like that Reggie Jackson's back. I think Reggie Jackson is a really good point guard. So much so that I think he needs to be the cornerstone of your franchise and not so much Andre Drummond. When I saw him get exposed in the playoffs last year in round one against Cleveland, and granted, you take it with a grain of salt because Cleveland's just playing on another level as a team. I also see the fact that I think Andre Drummond is an antiquated center who has his, you know, glass ceiling pretty apparent in today's NBA because he does nothing for you but rebound and dunk. I think those are limitations to the game of him being a big man who can't knock down free throws at a consistent basis. And you see him and you're like, well, you have DeAndre Jordan. But yeah, DeAndre Jordan at its essence has a Blake Griffin next to him and an all-star point guard and Chris Paul playing with him leading that offense. And so at most, he's a third option. Whereas right now, Andre Drummond's getting paid like a franchise player, and he's going to have to produce in the playoffs like one, and I don't think his game allows him to do so. So I honestly feel like he's somebody that is going to hold that team back from reaching the next level, even though on the surface it appears that he's their franchise cornerstone. What say you?
You know, this Pistons team, and I have them on the other end, but they're constructed like the Orlando Magic from 2009 that went to the finals, where they got a bunch of three-point shooters. They got a better point guard in Reggie Jackson compared to Jameer Nelson. Drummond is like the Dwight Howard. And I feel like Stan Van Gundy has that vision where you have four three-point shooters, a guy in the paint and whatnot. But it really hasn't come to fruition yet because they're 21 and 24 right now. I think you mentioned rumblings. I think when you were texting me about Reggie Jackson and Rubio and stuff like that. So, but that being said, I'm actually the opposite end in terms of they're my sunsetter team because this is where they are. This is who they are. Everybody's healthy. Tobias Harris, Marcus Morris, they are what they are. This is pretty much a jump shooting team. KCP has been great, but as you said, Stanley Johnson hasn't really, you know, rose to the occasion. They got Boban, who has the highest PER on that team. But there needs to be, I think, the trade that needs to happen, because you said Reggie Jackson should be the franchise player, is for Reggie Jackson. I think they need to find a facilitator more so, because that whole starting lineup is just points, points, points. They can stack up points, but I think their issue is more like defense and offensive efficiency, and I think one of those players, they need to have a playmaker, as you stated before.
Well, honestly, when I look at this team, man, I really wish they would have made a move for Tobias Harris for the other Morris twin that's in Washington. Because you know maximizes the play by putting Marcus and Markieff together. And, you know, as I'm looking at Tobias averaging about 16, and then I look at Andre Drummond, who's averaging 14 and 14 in essence. And those rebounding numbers, I mean, you're not going to find that, you know, elsewhere, you know, around this league. But Andre Drummond, right now, you look at his makeup, 10 years ago right now would be a 26 and 14 player. but he's only averaging 14 points a game. And if he's your number one guy, if he's your franchise cornerstone, you need more than his ability to just dunk on putbacks, catch the occasional alley-oop from a point guard who's not a traditional playmaker and who can rebound. You've seen it's that they can really isolate, you know, you saw it. I mean, Cleveland pretty much played a box and one against him last year in the playoffs, and he was a non-factor. Plus, he found himself in foul trouble quite frequently. So that's my only, you know, takeaway from that team, man. But we can definitely jump into our sunsets now.
Well, I also have one more upriser, and I want to give them credit.
All right.
The Memphis Grizzlies, top D, et cetera, the whole nine. Zebo's coming off the bench, blossoming. Andrew Harrison's filling in the role. Tony Allen's still chugging away at it. Jermichael Green. VC is still out there. Remember VC?
Yeah, I remember VC.
Connolly has been out for the majority of the year. He's come back.
No. And, never mind. I can't do it anymore when it comes to Mike Conley Jr. being injured. Yeah, that's my child in the background. I apologize, everybody.
Yeah, he can't believe it either, man.
Yeah. I started talking about Mike Conley Jr., man, and, it, you know, the kid shut me down. Yeah,
he got really excited. Marc Gasol is pretty much the MVP of this team as of right now in terms of games played. But remember, he's my all-star center for the West. So that's one of my last uprisers for the team. But let's move on to Sunsetters.
Let's hit it, man. You go first.
Well, you already mentioned the Pistons. I already spoke about the Pistons, but I'm going to move on to the favorite in Gotham City.
Here we go.
It's just the New York Knicks.
Well, we need sound effects for this show. I need the gas.
I predicted them to be 41-41. I'm completely wrong. The ESPN projections of 37 wins seem about right. Where they're going to be. They can't close out games. You know, they don't play any defense. I don't know if you noticed this, but Rose and Melo pretty much play like a zone defense when they're all playing, when the rest of the other players are playing man. Joakim Noah is coming into his own, but that doesn't matter. You could pretty much replace him with anybody on that. Like, you could put a Kuzminskas or Willie Hernan Gomez. You won't have any change in their defense. It's going to be the same thing. Courtney Lee has actually been their best signing this offseason. That's pretty sad because I expected a lot from Derrick Rose. It's a contract year for him, I understand. That's why he's shooting a lot. He's passing less. Brandon Jennings has been horrific, but he's a better passing point guard than Rose, and I think they need a passing point guard, and I think Derrick Rose needs to be traded. We need to get this team, like, they need to, it's time, ticking time bomb right now because, you know, Phil Jackson is, he has an opt-out clause, and not like everybody, some people have a, what's that thing called, no trade clause, yeah, but Phil Jackson has the opportunity to leave this situation this offseason. I think he will, or I'm hoping he will, right, Fred?
Listen, man, I'm sorry, I've been over here laughing the whole time, because to just hear you talk about the Knicks, I hear the pain in your voice, but go ahead.
It's tough, man, I mean, look, give me 30 more seconds.
I'll give you 30 minutes if you need it. Go ahead.
This team just stinks. I mean, they cannot close out games. Hornacek, I love Hornacek as a coach, but he is babying the crap out of Melo. Like, he won't yell at him. Melo can't do any wrong. Ron Baker will hit, like, two threes or something, and then he'll sub Melo in or something like that. KP was actually pushing the case for most improved or even, you know, taking a step forward as, you know, the number four pick that he was last year. He's kind of regressed because the Knicks just stink on defense, and it's been, as you could tell, it's impacting his play. You can't get rid of Melo. You just got to get rid of Rose. You know, get him for a pick, a second round pick, and an expiring. I don't care, but you got to shake up this team because they stink anyway. And if you stink, you got a higher pick, and they do have a pick this year. So I think that's what they should do. That's my soliloquy. I'm done, Fred.
All right, man. Yeah, I just want to let you know I'm patting you on the back from afar, man. When it comes to this team and you say that they can't get rid of Carmelo, I think Phil's trying every way that you possibly can. I mean, he's having his best friend write, you know, trash articles about him. He's leaking out, you know, the contents of his personal one-on-one meeting by saying he asked him if he wanted to be a Knick. Like, he's almost got Melo there, where Melo's willing to waive that no trade. I'm sure Melo's just going to watch the Clippers in the standings for the next couple of weeks while Chris Paul's recovering from thumb surgery, and he may try to, you know, make a decision here in about 3 weeks. But in essence, man, listen, I don't want to say you're stuck with what you got for this year, but you're stuck with Joakim Noah. I mean, 4 years, $72 million. When it comes to Brandon Jennings, I mean, I thought he had been serviceable, but of course he has his limitations. D. Rose has made no mistake, no secret of the fact he's playing for a max contract wherever he can get it.
Listen, he can score. And like last year we had Jose Calderon and Sasha Vujicic. I love what Rose is doing. It's just, we have too much scoring on this team, too much offensive power, and nothing on the defensive end. So he can score 25 a game, but he'll give up 22.
Absolutely, man.
He'll give up game-winning shots to Schroeder. You know, Melo finally doesn't take an ISO, a game-winning shot. Instead, he gives it to Courtney Lee, who thinks there's, like, another player that's doubling him in the corner. There's so many, just the lack of execution in the fourth. I mean, they just don't mesh. And their offense can carry them for 4.5 quarters. They just don't know how to close it. I'm sorry, Fred.
All right, it's all good. We'll go ahead and just move on from the Knicks because I don't think the sun set. I think it's midnight right now in New York, so it's all good. We'll move on. My sunset
team. That's my midnight team.
I got your midnight team. I got you. Well, not far behind them, I have the Chicago Bulls, man. You know, they had started off with quite the spark, man, at the beginning of the year, making me look bad. I told you, I was like, man, they're not going to make the playoffs. And right now, they're holding on by a game lead on Detroit as they hold on to the eighth seed right now. But Chicago, what are you doing? I mean, Rajon Rondo has turned out to be exactly what we thought. Having issues with the coaching staff, the playing time, you know, they thought they could try to make him a sixth man. Then they thought they could make him a 16th man and not play him and thought that might go over well. And no, that wasn't going to fly with Rajon Rondo on the roster. Dwayne Wade pretty much only plays when they're on TV on nationally broadcast games. So, I mean, he's...
You noticed that too?
Yeah, man. Yeah, if they're playing Cleveland, he's playing. Come hell or high water.
He looks good, though, on TV.
I mean, if you don't play the 7 games leading up to it, you would have fresh legs too, wouldn't you? So, I mean, you know, clearly D. Wade plays, you know, 33% of the time. And I love the article that came out, you know, where it was like, oh, my future here depends on Jimmy Butler. It's like, dog, your future depends on the fact that if anybody else wants to pay you $20+ million a season, that's what your future depends on in Chicago. And then when it comes to them and, you know, the are they going to trade Jimmy Butler, not trade Jimmy Butler – listen, man, I think ultimately if you do trade Jimmy Butler, you need to ship him to Boston and get multiple first-round picks in this upcoming draft and not delay or wait on that anymore. Because clearly Fred Hoiberg doesn't have the team to execute the offense in which he needs. I thought them getting MCW would help, but, you know, MCW can't shoot a jump shot either. So you basically got a taller, longer Rondo who's younger. And then, you know, Taj Gibson, you still see some of these holdovers from the Tom Thibodeau era. And it's just like, you know, right now, Dougie McBuckets is about their lone bright spot that I see as he's starting to come into his own as a consistent NBA scorer. But definitely Chicago Bulls are a sunset team for me, man.
I have a question for you before we move on to mine. Do you think Wade is ring chasing? Is it too much of a shallow?
I don't think he went to Chicago because he knew he could get a ring. I think he went to Chicago for the fact that he could be home, he could play with a young star he liked, and he could still be beloved. Because he's not going to face criticism in Chicago. And I think if anything else, that's what he's looking at. Maybe we need to start execute, you know, looking at, you know, fragile egos amongst fading superstars. Because I think that's I think that's the realm he's going to. He's like the anti-Melo, right? He was like, I'm going to go where I'm not going to get criticized, even though
also,
I'm... Go ahead.
And lastly, I want to give you a question. Do you think the front office of the Bulls, they're confused about where they're trying to go? Like, they're trying to revamp, it's not working, now they want to, like, reboot? Like, they're just confused, right?
Well, I think what's evident is that they completely deviated from their offseason plan. Like, clearly you could tell their thing was, we're going to go ahead and shed payroll... We're going to go ahead and start rebuilding around Jimmy Butler, you know. So we're going to say bye to guys who were former leaders on this team and productive for us for a long time. We're going to not re-sign Joe Kim. We're going to let Pau Gasol go. We're going to trade off Derrick Rose. Like, we're in full rebuild mode. And then it was like, all right, let's go ahead and sign Rajon Rondo. And then it was, oh, Dwayne Wade wants to come home? Oh, that'll sell some tickets. Let's go ahead and bring in D-Wade, who may have a year of, like, superstardom left in him. And it was
then it became like, we're going to compete for a playoff spot.
Exactly. And it was just like, come on, man. It didn't take long. It probably took about 45 days to realize, number one, Rajon Rondo's not an elite point guard anymore. And number two, Dwayne Wade is a, you know, mid-32 guard with no explosiveness left.
They also forgot that there's no three-point shooters in a three-point league, three-point-heavy dominant league. And they're pretty much, teams are just basically going inside the key, waiting, daring for them to shoot threes and whatnot.
I just loved when they hired Fred Hoiberg, and it was like, yeah, we're going to become an up-tempo offense and get away from these half-court stuff that Tom Thibodeau had. And they're like, yeah, well, who's going to be your point guard? Well, our backcourt's going to be Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade. And it was like, what?
Oh, my God.
So, listen, man, they are definitely a sunset team, and they'd be best served to go ahead, trade Jimmy Butler. You know D-Wade's going to opt out and go elsewhere in the offseason. And then probably buy out Rajon Rondo, since not all of his contract is guaranteed next year, and really wipe the slate clean.
Rondo's going back to the Kings. Just letting you know that.
I think Rondo's going back to Kentucky, because I don't know any NBA front office that wants to deal with that head case. But you go ahead, man. Who's your next sunset, bro?
I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me on this, but I got the Blazers. I think they've been underwhelming. Damian Lillard was my MVP this season, and clearly that's not the way it's turned out. CJ McCollum, that backcourt, man, it's a bright future. But then they got, as you mentioned earlier, when we had a conversation earlier, Evan Turner. It's kind of just like he needs the ball to really dominate, be that 8 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists guy in like 25 minutes, but he never gets the ball, so... because you always need Dame and CJ in the game. And then you got Aminu, who took a step back. Crab, he's kind of picking up now as a three-point shooter, really validating that contract. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot missing on this team. And I think it's obviously it's an easy pass to get to the lane for this whole team. So against this team, so they're not defending well. Aminu's not healthy. Too offensive heavy, kind of like the Knicks. They need a lot of work. I think they need to make a deal. I wouldn't say Crab. I'd say between Turner, Aminu, and Plumlee. Those are the guys that trade. And go from there. How about Vonleh? Have you ever seen any Vonleh games? How's he been playing?
Vonleh games. I haven't seen a Vonleh highlight. I don't think I've seen a Noah Vonleh highlight anywhere, man. But, you know, when I take a look, actually, you know, I take that back. He was in a dispensary recently and autographed somebody's paraphernalia. That's no joke.
Nice.
You can look that up. But in any event, man, when it comes to the Trailblazers, because we both were really high on this team. I thought they would be a three seed in the West. We both picked video game Dame to be MVP. I said Terry Stotts would be coach of the year. Man,
but I still think he's a great coach.
I do. I do think he's a phenomenal coach, man. I think it's four issues, man. Number one, when you're dealing with a young team, because across the board, these guys are all young. When they let LaMarcus Aldridge, when LaMarcus Aldridge chose to go to San Antonio, they decided that we're going to build around, you know, Damian Lillard, but we're going to keep guys in his same age bracket so they can all grow together. You got guys like Allen Crabbe. You brought in Ed Davis, like you said, Farouk Elaminu. And then you also had Mo Harkless. And, you know, you went out and got these guys who are all about 23, 24, 25 years old. And then you bring in Evan Turner. And Evan Turner, number one, can't be a starter alongside guys like CJ McCollum and video game Dame, because Evan Turner is best served to be a playmaker. And so now you have a six man. I'm not even going to talk about how much he's making, but you have a six man who you have to play because of how much he's making, even though he's disrupting the chemistry of your starting unit. So now you bring him off the bench and he can't really get into a flow, you know, within his own game. And I think there's so many young guys, number two, who are still trying to figure out who they're going to be as NBA players. You can't tell a 23-year-old you're only going to have this value on our team to be a spot-up shooter or to be a dirty work player and rebounder, or you can only be a playmaker in a six-man role. You're putting these glass ceilings on these guys who still don't even know who they're going to be in this league. You know, and number three, man, when it comes to this team, they invested in Festus Ezeli to be that rim protector. But it was pretty evident he had some knee issues. He wasn't always the most healthy in Golden State, but it never mattered. I mean, he was the 11th or 12th. He was the 11th or 12th guy on that bench, so it never really mattered because they had so many other guys playing in front of him. They could go with Andrew Bogut. They could play Draymond Green at the five for that death lineup, so it didn't matter if Festus Ezeli wasn't healthy. And then number four, honestly, man, you have a young superstar, man. And I don't know about his ability to lead a team yet. I think that comes with time. And so, you know, I think that could be the double-edged sword of having peers, you know, other fellow, you know, 21 to 25-year-old guys on your team. Are they ready to follow a leader that's either younger than them or their same age? And they don't, you know, they, I think they can't follow a guy who they don't respect as a superstar on their team yet. I don't think they view Damian Lillard as their, you know, unifying voice, the one voice that has to override everybody else. I think they still have to deal with that, and that's just a matter of youth.
You think that's you think CJ and Dame have issues?
Not at all. I don't think there's personal issues on that team, contrary to what George Karl went out and said about that team and blamed their struggles on, you know, Damian Lillard. I blame it on youth. I really do. I think these guys are just young. And you're still trying to figure out who they are as NBA players, and they don't know.
Gotcha. I mean, that makes sense, and I think we expected a lot from them, and I think they're definitely a sunset team because we both had them at MVP, and I thought they would build off last year. I still remember that three that Lillard hit against the Rockets a couple of years back with Howard and whatnot. And
yeah, the Rip City shot.
Oof, that was... And he was like, he was going to be the rest of the offseason. They were like, man, that three, he's the best. And I always remember that, but, you know, it hasn't been the same. Teams have improved in the West. I mean, but they've actually gotten better offensively, but regressed offensively. And that's it's a big issue for them.
Oh, yeah, man. And as we move on, I can't write them completely off, meaning not only this year, but next year. With youth, you're going to face inconsistency. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing right now. But my sunset team, man, I got the Clippers, man. I think they've peaked. Yep. We know who they are, nice. Man. We know exactly who this team is. And we also know that they can't stay healthy. And that doesn't change as they get older. You know, it's quite the opposite. And when you have a guy like Blake Griffin, who back-to-back years has missed significant time, Chris Paul, who's now missing significant time, and plus... Yep. Like I just said before about DeAndre Jordan, we know who he is, and we know he's at his best when he's a third option. I know there's been times where Blake's been out, and he'll churn out 20-20 games, but he's also doing that with Chris Paul as his point guard, not with Austin Rivers as his point guard. And so I think right now at this point in time, I think Doc Rivers has to have a real conversation with himself to figure out what he needs to do to actually give them a chance of building a future. You know, they're in L.A. because that other team that they share the hallway with, exactly, has already started building towards the future. And you're putting yourself behind the eight ball as you deplete assets to try to, you know, keep something going that's clearly a sinking ship.
You know, and Chris Paul was having a great – he's still having a great year, but he was 18-10. Seemed like they lowered his minutes. J.J. Redick was playing 28 minutes. Everything was humming, but as usual, there's always something. There's always something with this team that just keeps holding them back. And, you know, it was always the playmaking guard or like a Lance Stephenson piece away. But, you know, now they got this injury. What do you think? You think he'll make a deal in the deadline or he's going to hold tight?
Like I said that if the only player that they could go out and acquire would have been, you know, the Blake for Carmelo trade straight up. And I think a better chance if Blake were healthy. They were struggling as a team, and, you know, you figure Carmelo and Chris Paul try to broker that trade. But in all honesty, man, I really don't see them pulling the trigger on a big move in the midst of a season.
KG's coming back, right?
No. And even if he did, that wouldn't help.
You don't think Area 21's going to be dismissed?
No, Area 21 couldn't last for 11 minutes in an NBA game right now. We saw that last year in Minnesota. So, no, Area 21 is going to be residing on TNT Mondays and Thursday nights. You're welcome, TNT, for the plug.
Dude, you laugh, but Nate Robinson is getting signed with this team.
That's fine. Last I heard, Nate Robinson wanted an NFL tryout. So, you know.
I heard, he was on a couch on Area 21.
There you go. No doubt, man. Why don't you finish up with your last Sunset team, man? We'll get up out of here.
That was it. I had the Pistons as a Sunsetter.
Okay.
And I segued that in. So you had the Pistons as an Upriser. I had the Pistons as a Sunsetter. I had the Knicks. I don't want to go into that little tangent.
No, I had the Pistons as a fake Sunriser. That was the hesitation, man. That was the hesitation team.
Yeah. I think they're going on a their arrows are down, and their font color is red. So they're not doing anything positive, in my opinion.
I tell you what, man. All right, well, I'll go with this: a fake Sunset team who you think needs to be blown up. The San Antonio Spurs. No, I'm just kidding. All right, man. So, dog, how was Uncle Duty last week, man? You survived it. I imagine the child survived it, right?
Yeah, I think I got sick. That's why I've been muting you every now and then.
Okay.
I've been coughing. Every time I cough, I just mute it. I don't want Actman editing this or you editing this and just be like, you know, oh my God, he's coughing.
How dare he cough?
I'm just, you know, lately I was watching a couple of Nick games during Daddy Daycare or Uncle Daycare. And, you know, it's been disappointing. It's been a disappointing couple of days. They've been losing buzzer beaters after buzzer beaters. And, you know, predominantly we have MSG games. So, you know, just as much of an Uncle Daycare that was the most depressing television stuff on TV. And then plus, like, you got Chuck and Kenny, you know, they're televised games. Like, the Knicks are a crappy team, but they're getting televised, which is even more hysterical. And they just get ripping them apart. That's what's even worse. You know,
hey, on NBA TV today they replayed that Wizards and Knicks game from last Thursday, and it's like so sad because you're like, it's like watching the wedding video of a couple that got divorced a couple years later, because you can see how happy the crowd gets, like when the Knicks are, you know, trying to take that 1-point lead late in the game and Melo's at the free throw line and it's like, oh man, there's so much hope, and the Knicks bench is going crazy. And then it's like, boom, Melo to Courtney Lee in the corner. Courtney Lee with the head fake. Oh, he dribbles out and passes it to Brandon Jennings. Oh, he loses the ball, game over. Like, it was bad, man. It was so sad. I could look away.
For you, though.
What's up?
But do you think that ending of that game, so they had like that NBA review thing.
Yeah.
You think they should go away with that stuff? Because that's like kind of salt on the wound. It doesn't help.
Yeah, they need to go away with the, Kevin Durant was fouled actually on that last possession. There should have been a foul on Richard Jefferson.
Right?
Oh, Sidney Lowe was out on the court. Let's find him and say that he, like, just stop. Stop with that. Because it doesn't change anything.
Because they, you know, the next day it's like, oh my God, you're already pissed for the loss. And
yeah.
They're like, oh, we made a mistake. It's, you know, it sounds like the league's making more mistakes than ever. But it's the fact that they're like addressing it to the public,
admitting your mistakes.
They got to change that. Or hey, this is crazy. But you know how they have in football with the challenges.
Yes,
I think they should do that. Jeff Hornacek, you see,
throw the flag.
Be like, yo, hey, go on the TV screen. There was a coach. They had six players on the floor. You throw the flag out. You get two each game from each coach.
I this isn't
marriage. And then the ref comes out in the middle of the center court, and then he'll be like, reverse of call, free throw for the Knicks, technical foul on Sidney Lowe or whatever that assistant coach's name was.
Yeah, that was him. But that's also a judgment call. It's like, you know, pass interference in the NFL. You can't review those kind of calls. So it's, you know, it's one of those things, man. But this isn't marriage. You don't need to come back in retrospect and apologize for what you did wrong. Just let it roll. We all know that you guys are idiots and you're blowing calls left and right. Like, we get it. So, I mean, you admitting it, you know, a day later, or how they do that 2-minute review where they go back and talk about where referees screwed up in the last 2 minutes of a game. Like, It doesn't help. It's exactly like KD and Bron said. You're basically throwing the refs under the bus, but ultimately it just ruins their credibility for the next game when they come out on the court and the players see that and they're like, oh yeah, this ref sucks. I saw what he did a week ago that cost that team a game.
Did you see what happened with Westbrook that game last week where he got the inbound and he just starts walking it?
Yeah.
There was like 50 billion memes on it. Yeah. Did you like that one? And then, like, no one said the ref. This is how, you know, that's what they need. I think they need a fourth ref, part-time or whatever it is. But, like, dude, if the crowd is yelling, I think there's a call right there. It's a pretty obvious call. But then they called it at the end. But I was like, dude, I thought he got away with it.
Man, you know what
he literally cradled that ball. And he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm like, oh, goodness.
Because you could tell Westbrook thought it was practice. Like, Westbrook was like, I never dribble in practice. As a matter of fact, I think I, like, get carried around to rest my legs. So he just had a brain fart moment. It happens. But clearly this is what happens when we don't talk for, like, a week and a half. We go on a tangent of, like, oh, did you see this and did you see that? And hopefully the listeners actually really care about what we're talking about at this point in time. but dude, man, it's good to have you back, man. Do you want to shout out your nephew for surviving, and not hopefully pooping or peeing on you while you watched him?
Shout out to Sebastian.
No doubt, man. Seabass, you're my boy.
Seabass. Oh, man. But, anyway, any shout outs or just a whole A-team?
I guess, shout out to Jim Beam for getting me through my son's 2-year-old birthday party yesterday.
Jim Beam.
Yeah, man. It was, you know, there were Mickey Mouse decorations and some more awful playoff football. I tell you what, they need to throw the flag on this playoff football this year, boy.
Dude, those games sucked.
I mean, the wild card round was awful, and now the conference championships are awful. Like,
You didn't like the Cowboys and the Green Bay?
No. That was the divisional round. Week before that. Those games suck too. It's just like, man, I'm nervous about this Super Bowl. Not from a standpoint of I have a rooting interest, but from the standpoint I feel like it's going to be unwatchable.
Wait, who you got in this?
I typically go for the underdogs, man. I'm going with ATL. I really don't need to see Tom Brady hang another banner up there. But I will tune in because if they do win, I want to see the awkward exchange between he and Roger Goodell.
Yeah, I have Pats in 10. I just feel like they're going to figure out the Falcons. I heard the Falcons are averaging like 38 points a game or some nonsense.
Yeah, dog. They hang the points up and their defense is clearly underrated. But, I mean, if I'm going to go with the, like, you know, one of those good old projections, I'm going to go with, you know, 23-17, Patriots are going to win. Tom Brady's going to punch Roger Goodell in the face, and Robert Kraft's going to put a cigarette out on his nose or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, dude, that would be awesome because that 4-game suspension was pretty pathetic. And I'm not a Pats fan or in any means or not. I'm a Jet fan, and they sink anyway. So, but I just feel like that's a great comeback. It's just fitting. Like, you made him miss 4 games. They ended up going like 14 and whatever. Well, like 14-1 or whatever it is, and that was it. You know?
Did you just say 14 and whatever? God, you're such a New Yorker. Get off my head. You disgust me with your New York jargon. No, I'm just kidding.
We got a bunch of crappy teams in New York.
Hey, man, does Melo make it to the end of the week in New York, or how has he not punched Phil Jackson in the face yet?
I don't think he cares. He's getting paid. He's got that venture capital. He's pretty busy here, you know. You got to see my Twitter, dude. All these people want him gone.
They want Melo gone.
They want Melo gone, man. They're pissed at him. They want him to waive that no trade, and that's it. They just want to get like a point guard that just runs pick and roll with KP.
Yeah, okay, because that's available on the market right now. Go get Kendall Marshall right now.
Kendall Marshall was nasty with the Lakers when D'Antoni was there.
You know, that championship era, the D'Antoni era of the Lakers, that's right.
Hey, man, I was a big fantasy guy, and I remember Kendall had like 20 assists, and I was like, this guy D'Antoni, anytime whoever's on his team is going to be making like a crap load of money or inflated stats, like Bazemore. went nuts with the Lakers for like 30 games, and he ended up going to like the Hawks.
I'm about to hang up on your ass. All right, man, that's it. We're not about to relive the Mike D'Antoni era in LA like it's something that we need to go back and revere. All right. Hey, man, it's good to have you back on the show. Except thanks, for the man. End of the show.
Thanks,
Pat. But, man, we'll
your
do
Lakers got, your Lakers got blown out last night.
God, we got waxed by one-legged Dirk in the freaking Mavs. The Dallas Mark Cubans, man. I don't know, man. It's time to make a decision. You got to figure out who's it going to be. I mean, first of all, Jordan Clarkson's regressed so much so that he's hanging out with the Jenners and Kardashians. It's to the point now where, you know, Brandon Ingram I like. I like, Zubats. He's looking good. Larry Nance Jr. can't stay healthy. And D'Angelo Russell, I think, is a complete, you know, flow and momentum killer. I'm telling you, please, please find some type of trade to bring in a solid, decently, you know, big name player for Larry Nance and D'Angelo Russell. If not, you're going to they're going to be chasing like, Paul George.
Moscow and Dang?
I don't like Dang. Dang does nothing. Dang does absolutely nothing. I actually like Mozgov. I don't like him for $17 million, but I like Mozgov. And, yeah, man, Luol Deng is the highest-paid assistant coach in the world, so shout out to him. But, yeah, they need to make a move.
We're talking about, like, you know, the crevice of the league right now.
Yeah, we've bounced all the way around. There was one mention of San Antonio and Golden State in jest, and the rest of it, we talked about middling teams and now the bottom feeders. So, everybody, you are absolutely welcome. I hope you have enjoyed having Jim and I back together on the show. That's all I got.
All right, man. Take care. Shout out to the A-Team.
Is that it? Or is that us? Is that the network or is that it? Never mind. Anyway, shout out to the whole Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Don't forget to find my boy Jim J. Matthew on Twitter at NYJones7. Don't forget to hit me up at Flagrant Take and the website www.flagranttake.com.
And, Chris Axman. And like our Facebook page. Chris, we love you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. Take care. Peace. And happy Black History Month because it's coming up. Feel free to get me something nice. Peace.